Welcome to Data Protection Gumbo. It's more than just a podcast. It's a source of insights to keep you tapped into all things data-driven so that you can be the most informed technical expert in the virtual room. Listen in weekly to stay educated on the latest trends in backup, recovery, storage, cloud, and security. I'm your host, Demetrius Malbro, and on this episode of Data Protection Gumbo, I have a conversation with Aaron Clymer, founder and CEO of Data Clymer, a premier consulting firm specializing in building modern cloud data systems and helping organizations instill a data-driven culture. Aaron has led Data Clymer's engagements with numerous major league sports organizations in the MLB and NFL, including the San Francisco Giants and Las Vegas Raiders, where Data Clymer's data engineers have implemented a modern cloud data stack that enables data teams to own and control their entire systems. Prior to founding Data Clymer, Aaron spent 7 years building the data team at Salesforce. His mission at Salesforce was to help 400 plus product managers drive product strategy and instill a data-driven culture. And in this episode, we discuss the future of cloud data warehousing, why you may need a data lake or data warehouse, and how to tap into the insights and analytics of them. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Welcome to Data Protection Gumbo, Aaron. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great, Demetrius. Thanks for having me on.
It's awesome to have you on the show. I am looking forward to tapping into some of your insights here. Why don't you start off by giving the Gumbo listeners a brief rundown of yourself and also your company?
Yeah, sure. So I am founder and CEO of a data warehousing, data engineering firm, consulting firm called Data Clymer. I used my last name because the domain was available and it made a lot of sense. Been going 6 years strong here, but my career really has been all in high tech. I've been in high tech for 25 years, mostly Silicon Valley. I ran the data team at Salesforce for about 7 years prior to this and took a lot of the methodology that we developed there for getting data into the hands of every business user we could, democratizing data, making sure that data is actually used and taken action is taken on it, you know, from the masses. And I started this company. I wanted to become a true expert at full data stacks, data warehouses, cloud technology. And so I realized I couldn't do that by being at one or two companies in 10 years. I wanted to see 50 or 100, you know, sort of implementations in 5 years. You know, so right. I've done that and really enjoying our time here.
Awesome. So let's get right into it. So primarily, I really would like to tap into data warehousing. I do not have a lot of conversations around data warehousing, and I am really curious right now just around, why don't we start off with I know the evolution is always exciting, kind of where we've come from to where we are now, but why don't you give us a rundown of maybe the future of where cloud data warehousing is going?
Sure, yeah. It's super exciting times in the data warehousing field, even though that sounds like a not a sexy space. It's it's really, really pretty exciting to see the technology and the innovations that are coming. And I think I do have to give you just a quick sense of what it was like in the past to help also understand the future. You know, again, say 10 years ago when I was at Salesforce, you know, we were on an Oracle data warehouse on premise, took a team of 10 engineers and 6 to 12 months of planning to get a enterprise data warehouse up and running. You know, capacity was planned out. The data modeling was a lot of work. Performance was still a big problem. You know, serving hundreds to thousands of users was a very large technical challenge. Plus there's a lot of downtime because things would go wrong, or, you know, we even have to do upgrades and all of that. So fast forward to today, there's a whole bunch of new vendors that did not exist 10 years ago. And they're full cloud and they've solved pretty much all the technical sort of administrative headaches of running a data warehouse. So it's a breeze now. You can spin up a data warehouse in 5 minutes. You can start bringing in data right away. And it just works, right? So you don't have to worry about anything on a technical side, really. You don't have to worry about compressions, you know, or security, or really anything. It just works. So you can focus on your business logic, and that's great. Then you fast forward to the future, and where I see this going is just beyond the. It's more about the use cases that you can solve, you know, because now you've got all these things that only cloud enables. So, you know, first of all, there's unlimited space, really. Throw as much data as you want in there. So the idea of it, what some people talk about data lakes versus data warehouses, but you know, a lake is more about throwing petabytes or large amounts of data into a storage area, and a warehouse is more about structured data that you can query. But there, those two concepts are merging. And so you could basically throw anything into data you want into your data warehouse. You know, the kinds of use cases we're going to solve in the future are pretty amazing, because we can, again, have almost unlimited data. And in the past, data warehouses were actually designed for analytics. They're designed to put large amounts of data in one place and then scan, you know, millions to billions of rows in a query to get an answer. So they're built for scanning large amounts of data, which is exactly the opposite of what transactional databases are that run applications. Transaction, you know, most databases that we're familiar with run all your SaaS apps or applications, wherever they are, they're built for single transactions. So a very different architecture for different purposes. But that transactional capability is coming back into the data warehouse of the future. And so data warehouses, sort of, you won't have to choose between those two architectures anymore. They're merging into one thing. And so you're going to be able to get applications running off your data warehouse and be able to do analytics on large amounts of data, and basically just have one central data warehouse. So that's going to be eventually, I think, where a lot of applications are just running. And so your data is all in one place. The sort of tenet of data warehousing for 30, 40 years has been just get all your data in one place from various sources and then be able to analyze it and see a 360-degree view of your customer or your product or what have you. That's only been exacerbated in the last, let's say, 10, 15 years since SaaS applications have really come online, and businesses now are running their entire company off SaaS applications.
Right.
My company, I'm running my company off of about 15 different applications,
okay.
Right? And they're all cloud.
That's small.
And maybe that's small, right? You get 20, 20, 30 sometimes,
hundreds.
And sometimes hundreds, right? That's how the larger your business is, the more complicated it is, the more solutions and tools you need to run it. Well, that means data is fragmented across, you know, 100 places, and you have nowhere to look to see a 360-degree view of your customer, for instance. So yeah, getting it all in one place has always been the mantra of data warehousing. So in the end of the day, if you think about it, why not have all that data in one place from the beginning? And not even have to bring it in.
You know, yeah.
But that's kind of the future, I think, of where ultimately data warehousing is going.
Awesome. And stepping back and maybe setting the stage for, and I think you explained it very succinctly. You mentioned data lake and data warehouse. They're similar but different. But depending on the size of an organization and a company, is that typically something that a medium to enterprise, large size customer would actually utilize? Because I'm not sure if a smaller organization, let's say less than 50 people, really needs a data warehouse. Can you explain the differences around, like, when to use a data warehouse and why do you need it, et cetera?
Yeah, I think actually companies that are quite small need a data warehouse. It's really basically as soon as you want to start leveraging data to affect your business, you know, you want to be data driven, you need a system by which to be able to look at that data and automate a lot of the data processing so you can just get business answers quickly. I mean, a company at our size, you know, we're almost 50 people, pretty small company. We absolutely need, you know, our own data warehouse and our own analytics. I mean, I still would be in the dark without a lot of that. And it would take, even at our size, it would take way too long to do it manually, to throw it all in a spreadsheet and take 3 days to sort of come up with an answer. You know, I want to be able to slice and dice our business within minutes and understand what's going on in every aspect. So a company is actually pretty small, need it. And that's, again, that's sort of the great news about this day and age, is the cost of these systems have dropped precipitously. And so it's within reach of most companies to be able to do it.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. And you keep mentioning analytics, and I think you said that was the old way of tapping into, I guess, the reason why you would have a data lake is to go and try to get some of those insights and analytics. What's the new reason, I guess, for a data warehouse? Is there anything besides analytics that someone would actually use a data warehouse for or a data lake for?
Yeah, I didn't really mean to say it's the old way in the sense that you still need analytics okay. in every company and look backward to see how the business has done in the past to understand where you're going and trends, things like that, right? So that's always going to be there. That was the primary use case not too long ago. Now, in addition to that basic use case, we're starting to see a lot of companies take the data that they're using that are stored in the data warehouse, have it be updated fairly quickly up to near real time, and then push that data back out into their business systems to have, you know, to take more action on the data. So just as an example, like you might have an email campaign that you're running and you have a couple dimensions or dimensional data about your customers that you just kind of got into your data warehouse and you think would actually refine or better target that campaign. So you push that field or there's two fields about your customers back into your email marketing system. And then it refines, you know, the campaign and it's better targeted. So just as a simple example, you can get the, you know, that data might have come from a completely separate system. And so you got to get it into your business. You got to get it into the business system that needs the data to take action on it in an automated way. That's sort of the near future, is putting a lot more data from the data warehouse back into business systems to make it actionable and, you know, actually make a difference to your business. And then, you know, the longer sort of vision, I think, is that these applications will start to, instead of having to push data in and out of the data warehouse, the data is just always there and you know, you're not really moving data around.
Yeah, and you briefly mentioned a little bit about the evolution. So things were running on premises, you know, within data centers and probably sprawled across a couple of servers in the environment. And now things have moved to the cloud. I do remember there being some hesitation to, you know, running workloads in the cloud because of this, you know, security. Oh, it's not safe. And what if, you know, this happens or whatever? But I do know that, you know, according to Gartner, like 99% of all misconfigurations happen from the customer perspective, that, you know, you know, we're not doing a good job as customers to kind of lock down and using these security controls that are provided from these SaaS applications. Is there anything that you're seeing around if it's running in the cloud that it's not safe, or is it safer? You know, what's your perspective there?
Yeah, that's really interesting finding there. I hadn't heard that, but I would totally believe that because most tools are fairly good, and I think it's just they have to be used appropriately, right? Then they can be a great solution. But yeah, I think that's one of the most interesting aspects of cloud applications and data in the cloud in general is it's taken quite a long time, longer than I would have expected, for businesses in general to trust data in the cloud. I mean, I was at Salesforce in the early 2000s, and you know, Salesforce spent 10 years just convincing the world that they can put their CRM data, their customer data, which is very valuable data, in the cloud and it's secure. And sure enough, that was the case. And why was that? Well, it's because Salesforce is going to invest a lot of resources into security because they definitely do not want a breach that could sink the whole company. So trust was always the number one value there. And building out the security, world-class, you know, cutting-edge security features within the application was a priority. So you're going to get that with any major cloud vendor. They're going to have more resources than any particular company would ever have to implement security around the system, right? So you actually get the best in class security when you go to the cloud because you're getting the sort of the output of these very large security teams.
Yeah, I love the way you put that in. You know, Salesforce it took them a while, like, to really convince the world that, hey, here's how you should do it, and this is where you should actually run your workloads based upon being able to, you know, have really, you know, quick access to that data, and to also, you know, maybe do that at a scale that you normally wouldn't be able to do it at a scale from that perspective. So tapping into cloud and And that would actually give us the information, or we would install software from that perspective. But as far as just like migrating data into a data warehouse, migrating the enterprise data warehouse to the cloud, what are some of the best practices around doing that?
Well, and it's interesting that you, like, again, you're thinking about the difference between on-prem and cloud, and there's so many things you don't have to worry about as much with anymore. You know, all your disaster recovery, backup, and even the security features we talked about before, those kind of go away when you move to the cloud, because you kind of get them for free to a large extent. We've never had a client lose data in the cloud when we're using these cloud data warehouse systems, like a Snowflake system, for instance. I mean, it's automatically backed up and secured, so you don't have to worry about it. So when you're migrating, it's just, there's nice because you really can focus more on the business logic that you're migrating, the data itself. And it's usually a big opportunity, actually, to, not to get too in the weeds here of data warehousing, but the one of the biggest challenges and almost, sometimes I call it an art of what data warehousing companies like ours do, is modeling data. So when you bring in raw data from these source systems, it's almost unusable. It's very hard to actually use it. It's very cryptic. There's all sorts of codes and lookup fields that don't make any sense to the end user. There's a lot of data that's metadata about the data that, again, is not that useful for a lot of people, and it's confusing. There's hundreds of tables to join together in myriad ways. So it can be really, really complicated. So you want to model that data, run it through an ETL process that cleans it, normalizes it, formats it, so it makes it easy for end users to understand. You know, your goal is to have the average marketer, salesperson, you know, finance person out there be able to look at the data and understand it and ask questions. So modeling is a critical piece of data warehousing. You want to make it easy to use. On-premise systems have typically required different kinds of modeling, more for performance, you know, issues and trying to get the most out of things like that. When you go to the cloud, you have there's so many different reasons why you get much more performance. It just alleviates a lot of the problems that we had with on-premise systems. And so you actually, it's an opportunity to maybe remodel your data in a simpler model. There's a lot of things you can do to make it simpler. You know, you don't have to have as many tables. You can pre-join a bunch of data together. There's a lot of advantages. And so you can have a simpler model. So it's a really good idea to take a step back, not just migrate exactly what you have, you know, word for word or piece for piece, but take a look at how you might be able to leverage some of the modern cloud technology and implement it in a different way, which means that you might be ingesting your data in a different way. You might be modeling it in a different, again, more simple, more performant way. And even the way you do your analytics, your dashboarding, or whatever the outputs are of your system, that can change as well quite a bit, because you have these approaches that are just much more performant and again, cost-effective and easier for the end users. So it is a re-architecture and redesign opportunity for you when you move to the cloud. But what you get out of that is something that's going to be much, much more effective than if you just literally like lift and shift what you already have.
Yeah. And I just wanted to add as well, and just make sure from, you know, my perspective and what I see is that, yeah, these SaaS vendors, they are providing you resiliency, right? And if something happens, right, like human error or some type of data loss event, there may be a way to get that data back, but having a third party tool that specializes in like making it really simple and fast and efficient for you to get that data back, I think is definitely well worth the investment. So I wanted to put that plug out there. I'm not bashing SaaS, but there are specific companies out there that, you know, will make that process a lot easier. One other thing that I wanted to ask you as well, like when you're going into these environments that have data warehouses, data hygiene, like is that a thing? Like, is there something someone needs to look out for if they are going to kind of run this huge data warehouse, like a health check or a tune up or anything from that perspective?
Absolutely. You know, the reason that we're in business and a lot of data professionals are in high demand is because data is still difficult. Not necessarily from a technology perspective. Again, it's really data. The data itself, data is complicated. It's dirty. It it has problems. You know, there's bad data, lots of bad data in every data set. So there's a lot of hygiene to be done. And it comes back to trust, right? Again, you need to sort of clean all that data and make sure that it's valid before you turn it over to end users. If you release bad data and end users figure out it's bad, they lose trust immediately in the system. And that's the number one killer of data projects that I've seen. So, you know, trust from the beginning is so important when you're building a data system. And so building in that hygiene from the ground up is critical. So we build, for instance, everything from, a ton of tests and checks that run automatically all the time. Every time you load another batch of data, you want to run all your tests to make sure that it looks clean. And it can be really challenging, right? It's easy to determine that data is missing, let's say, or you have a completely, you know, null field that should not be null, you know, or should not be empty. But what's harder is if you're bringing in some data and you're missing a little bit, you know, you have a lower volume, but the data is still there, but it's just maybe missing some things and it's hard to tell if it's missing. So for instance, if you had like, let's say you're tracking web traffic off a website and you have, you know, thousands of clicks every minute, and you're just kind of tracking all that stuff. Well, if in 1 hour you're actually missing some clicks, or you're missing, say, 15 minutes of, you know, events, but it's not all in the same chunk of time where you see a complete gap, you just have reduced data, but you don't really know that it's not there, right? If it's not there, how do you know? How do you detect that it's not there? So you have to do things like check for thresholds, you know, see, hey, is this the amount of data we expected based on historical patterns? You know, and if it's really below some threshold, maybe we want to create a warning and have somebody go check and see if we can figure out if we're missing some data. So it can get really complicated, but it's definitely important to do that. And, you know, the other thing that I like to do is we really like to build health check dashboards for end users. So they see the status of the system. They see the health of the data right there in front of them. It's very much like a SaaS company putting out a system status dashboard of their cloud, right? Is their cloud up? Is there downtime? You know, are certain features down? Is something wrong? You know, and having a dashboard that tells users what the status of the system is helps them build trust in, you know, whatever they're doing and looking at. So we do that a lot with data itself. So you can tell whether, you know, again, in a data warehouse, you might be bringing in data from 30 data sources. We just talked about one, you know, a company running their entire business off of 30 SaaS applications. So you're bringing in data from 30 applications. Well, what if one of them starts failing for a day? You know, that piece of data is going to be out of date, or that kind of data. So you want to know that when you're doing your analytics. Or, you know, the more and more you're running your business off this data and it's becoming more business critical, obviously, the more hygiene and the more health checks you need to make sure that the data is accurate and it's good. And that's complicated. So that's a whole area that requires a lot of extra work.
Yeah. So if someone is using like a different variety of data integration vendors and platforms, and, you know, you're talking things like Looker and Google BigQuery and just all of these different types of cloud applications that they're running, it's almost like they can operate in the silo and just not being able to connect all of the dots with that data. Is that something that that you see? Do you see a lot of different siloed approaches and how data is just kind of decentralized altogether? And if so, what are some of the insights you can provide around maybe providing like a data strategy for the Gumbo listeners, I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Data silos is a huge problem in business in general. And that's really why data warehouses exist, is to eliminate the silos, you know, bring it all together into a single place. For the technical folks, if you've ever queried data with SQL, with SQL, you know, as soon as you can't bring in a certain piece of data through a join because it's not in the database, now you're talking about 10x the amount of time to do your analysis. You know, if it's not right there and you can bring it in when you need it in a minute or two via a query, then you're talking about, again, like way more time to do your analysis. So bringing your data into one place is often the only way to effectively analyze, again, your customers, your products, whatever you're interested in and understanding. Otherwise, it just takes too long and most companies just give up. So when you have data silos, you either have somebody full-time, some poor soul on a spreadsheet, you know, trying to get the data into one place over days and days, maybe even weeks to try to get an answer. And it's just horrible, you know, or you actually have a data warehouse where you bring it all into one place. So we try to eliminate data silos. That's really one of our number one goals in this business, is to get rid of data silos.
And can you give us a definition of what a modern data stack is?
Sure. Yeah. A modern data stack would, first of all, be full cloud and therefore be able to integrate with all of the other cloud components you need. And there's really three main pieces of the stack. Now, the stack could be a lot more detailed layers, but there's three main layers. One, you need the actual data warehouse. So that's the database where you store all your data. You also need to be able to bring data in and push data back out of that database. And, you know, even though data warehouses come with some rudimentary tools to do that, you often need another vendor that's going to do that in a very robust way. So you need that's what we would call an ETL layer or ELT layer. It used to be called ETL, extract, transform, and load is what ETL stands for. And these days it's ELT because it's extract your data from your data source, load it just raw into your data warehouse first, and then transform it and model it. It's kind of the modeling I was talking about before within the data warehouse and make another basically copy of it, but that's cleaned and structured for the end user. So you need an ETL layer. And then the final thing is a business intelligence layer, or basically a UI where end users can query the data, ask questions about the data, get insights without being technical and having to understand SQL or any of that, but just being able to answer questions from the data. So those are the three main layers of a modern cloud data stack.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty insightful. And I don't work with Snowflake often, but I'm just curious, and maybe the Gumbo listeners are curious as well. What exactly are people using Snowflake for?
Yeah, well, primarily it is data warehousing. So Snowflake, their innovation, there's a lot of innovations that Snowflake has brought to the industry. Early on, you know, the biggest innovation was the ability to separate out compute from storage. And, you know, not many vendors had done that previously. Amazon Redshift was sort of the big cloud data warehouse on the scene 6-7 years ago before Snowflake really took a lot of market share. And, you know, Amazon Redshift didn't have a separation of compute from storage. So what that meant was that you can come in, and it's really eliminated a lot of the performance issues that have been one of the biggest challenges for data warehousing in general. What you can do is you can put all your data in one place, and then you can spin up separate compute clusters, each dedicated to a specific set of users or an application that can all be querying the same data, but using different CPUs essentially. And so they're not conflicting with each other, and they're not competing for resources. So you can scale indefinitely because you can always spin up more compute. So a good example of that is at a medium-sized company where you have 500 end users, and they're all going to be in Looker or Power BI or Sigma Computing, you know, a BI tool. If you had all 500 users, you know, logging at the same time concurrently and trying to ask a question, the whole system would probably bog down to a crawl, and nothing would happen because of performance issues on any, even a modern cloud data warehouse. But what you could do is you can say, well, I'm going to spin up this compute cluster. And that sounds maybe complicated, but it's super simple from your database administrator essentially can do it in a few minutes. Without even coding, they can just say, okay, I'm going to set aside this amount of compute, and these users are going to be able to use this compute. So the marketing team gets one compute cluster, the sales team gets another, the finance team gets another, the product guys get another, and they're all querying the same data, but they're not competing for resources in terms of processing. So that was a huge innovation that, allowed these systems again to scale very, very well, and very easily. So data warehousing is, you know, Snowflake brought that kind of innovation to the forefront, and they are continually always adding more and more features to help with just data warehousing in general, including some data modeling capabilities and, you know, ingesting data in. And now Snowflake's going is what I was talking about a little bit earlier about having these this ability to do transactional databases, essentially, that could support applications. And so, you know, for a long time, Snowflake has said, we're not just a data warehouse, we're a data platform. But everybody's a data platform, you know. But they truly are starting to become more of a platform. The with a lot of these features that I was talking about, there's also a basically an app store that they have, a marketplace with vendors that can bring you data. Which brings me actually to the other innovative feature that the Snowflake came on the scene with several years ago now, is what they call data sharing. And again, this is something that only the cloud can do. This is a huge benefit of a cloud environment. So if you're a company and you're running Snowflake, and I'm your partner, I'm another company, I'm running Snowflake, right? And you want to share some data with me. Let's say, let's give an example. Like, let's say I'm a retailer and you're a vendor that helps me with shipping and returns, you know, or something. And I just want to see how my customers are doing with all the return data, you know, and you're going to share it with me. You can go in your Snowflake database and you can click up with a few clicks. You can expose a table or two or three or a whole schema to me. And it just shows up in my data warehouse as if it's in my data warehouse. And I don't even know. I do know there's a little icon, but it's hard to know that you know, it works just like it's in my data warehouse. So effectively, it's all logical, right? You've just logically exposed some data that's in the cloud into my instance, and you're not actually moving the data. So that's a hugely innovative. You know, again, it anytime you have to move data, there is always a decent amount of work and there's a lot of checks. And sometimes, you know, you don't want to make sure you lose data along the transit and all that stuff. So that eliminates a lot of the headaches of moving data around, and it's pretty innovative. Right now we're working with, for instance, major league sports like the NFL and football teams. Well, the NFL, same problem, you know, they want to share data that the league has with all the teams. And the teams have some data that they want to share with the league. You know, and again, there's a lot of, right now, there's just so much effort and time and money spent on just syncing that data between teams and league, right? But if you had data sharing, it would just be almost instantaneous and be very easy. So cloud is bringing some kind of amazing features in this space.
Wow, that is all super insightful. And just, you know, one thing that you mentioned as well with the data sharing model, and it reminds me of the book, and I always mention this, it's a book called The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman. And how the internet kind of leveled the playing field across the entire world. Now everyone can tap in and access data all from the same vehicle, and that's the internet. And that's why you and I sit here today. We're streaming right now over, you know, ones and zeros, and able to see each other and hear each other, you know, kind of in an on-demand fashion. But one last question, and it's just a personal one around, like, what are you reading today? Any book recommendations for the Gumbo listeners?
Sure, yeah. I'm reading some kind of classics at this point. So, for instance, Five Dysfunctions of a Team.
Mm-hmm, yep.
I think that's a super helpful book to this day of understanding how teams should gel and trust each other and work together well.
Patrick Lencioni or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. I always find that inspirational, and I go through that actually with my team every quarter or two, like revisit that book and talk about certain aspects of it. So I've always loved that book in terms of figuring out how to work together as a team. And then on the personal side, if anybody has children out there, The Whole Brain Child is actually a wonderful book about this sort of psychology and of how to raise a child effectively, right? With their understanding how they develop and how you're left your sort of high brain and low lizard brain and how it all works together and emotions. And so yeah, I love those kind of insights.
And probably a reason why you shouldn't spank your children, because their brain hasn't developed yet until they turn 27.
There you go. Yeah, or 30 or something like that.
Yeah, it's still not an excuse to not discipline your children. You have to figure out what discipline is, right? So taking iPhones away and, you know, devices, et cetera. So there's ways to do it. You know, however, Aaron, it's definitely been super insightful for me to have this conversation with you, learn a little bit about data warehousing and data lakes and some of the shifts from, you know, on-premises to the cloud, et cetera. So it's definitely been an honor to have you on Data Protection Gumbo.
Well, thanks. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for listening to Data Protection Gumbo. Please follow us on Twitter at DPG Podcast and join our Backup and Recovery Professionals LinkedIn group. Just search Backup and Recovery Professionals on LinkedIn and you will find the group. And until next time, Gumbo listeners, have a fantastic week.